When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Own the Microphone. Join me, Bridget McGowan, an award-winning international professional speaker and owner of the independent publishing company, BMAC Talks Press. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Own the Microphone. I am your host, Bridget McGowan, and I have with me today, Dave Leith. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bridget. I am excited to be here today. I am definitely loving life.
Oh, well, what I love about your life is it is not the quote unquote typical speaker life. If there's anything such as a typical speaker life, will you share with our listeners exactly how did you get into owning the microphone?
So I worked as a street cop. I worked as a very hard street cop for 17 years. And 6 years into that of me being a hard charger, I was moved into a community-oriented policing. And inside of that, we would stand up at community meetings. And I was always nominated to be the guy to do those meetings. I never had a problem talking to community members and answering questions and being the guy. I enjoyed it. So I didn't fear it. And very early on, I took Toastmasters as well. So that had always been a desire of mine.
So for those people who say, okay, that's lovely, it was never scary to you, but I'm not like you, what do you say to someone who would absolutely love to be able to get up and lead the meetings and speak without fear? What's a suggestion you have?
There's a principle of low stakes practice. So when I was at those community meetings, I always viewed them as very low stakes. So if I had a talk coming up, I would get my my oldest son, who's an adult now, and I'd get him and a few of his friends. If you have 3-4 people in front of you, and you'll be a little nervous initially, especially depending on how important you make the level of the talk in front of you. So if you don't make it too important, then if you just consider it practice and you know that you're speaking in front of 2 or 3 individuals who aren't really judging you, they're just there to support you. That's low stakes practice. So the more low stakes practice that you can get when you step in front of a larger crowd of 12 people or 24 or 200, whatever the number is, you feel much more comfortable because you've already gotten in that low stakes practice. It all comes down to reps. I look at everything like reps. So it's like the gym. At first, when you step in there, if you haven't been working out and you go into a gym, it can be very intimidating. And it's the same thing when you step up in front of other people to speak. It's just reps, and you get more and more comfortable with it. The first time you go to do a pull-up, your body's just going to hang there, and your arms are going to feel like jelly, and you're going to be a little bit nervous about who might be looking at you that you can't do a single pull-up. Almost everyone can do a push-up, but not everyone can do a pull-up. And when they go to hang from that bar, and it's your very, very first time, you're going to feel uncomfortable. It's the same thing when you first step in front of people. But if you really have a desire to do it, that means you have the power to do it. And if you institute that principle of low stakes practice, you will feel like you've gotten in the reps, and it'll give you the confidence that you need.
I like the point you make about reps, because I infuse that into my speaking quite a bit. Although I've been a professional speaker since 2001, I am not going to deliver a presentation without making sure I practice beforehand. get in those reps. And I practice a minimum of 3 times the entire presentation from start to finish. Also, along those lines of reps, I share with other speakers that it is incredibly important that you visit the place that you're going to present at
Yes.
least a couple of hours before the actual presentation. All the better if you can visit it the day before, because when you go the second time, reps, it's familiar. You know what
Yes.
the room looks like, you know where the podium is, you know where the mic is, and so on and so forth. Cannot stress the reps value enough.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to assume, based on, what you've said about reps, practice is incredibly important to you when it comes to preparing for a presentation. What else is incredibly important, a must-have or a must-do?
So I feel like if you script it out and then you know, so if you break it down to a really, really simple structure, like you're gonna tell them what you're talking about, you're gonna share your story, and then you're gonna share your 3 pieces of content, and then you're gonna share maybe a lesson attached to that content, and then you're gonna have your call to action, and then maybe close with an emotional story, right? So if you break it down to those 5 parts, maybe. And then if you're the type, some people are different. Some people want to write out the entire words, and I never go word for word, but I do like to write it out because writing is thinking. And then I'll go over the script, I'll read it, I'll read it on video. I'll watch the video of myself reading it, and then I'll realize that sounds too red, so then I'll put down my script. And I'll just go off of my 5 basic, hey, this is what I'm going to talk about today. So today, for instance, we're going to talk about the power of your story. That's what I love to talk about, story, right? And we're going to spend the next 5 minutes talking about that. It's just going to be 5 minutes of us talking about that. And then I would tell you that my story is that of a street cop who became a detective, who then became an author, and then became a speaker. The speaking was, filtered in there as well, but those are my self-identifying roles, and those are my identities that I took on. When you say I am, you're taking on an identity. It's the shortest story in the world. So if you say I am 3 times, if you say I am a grandfather, I just told you a lot about me. I have children. I'm a grandfather. I'm very proud to be a young grandfather because people say, you're a grandfather? I say, yes, I am. I'm very proud of it. I'm not, I used to be shy of the fact that I had children young. I used to be embarrassed to be one of the youngest parents going to the parent-teacher meetings. But now that I'm so free, I'm actually very proud of the fact that I'm a young grandfather and I love spending time with my grandkids. So the second I am statement is I am a detective. That tells you, what I did for my career. I am a great interviewer. I am a podcaster. So when I tell you those things, you kind of know some of the things that I do. And it's a very short story. And you can make it, you can expand on that and you can make it longer, or you can keep it that short. When you say I am, you're telling a story. So you just have to recognize that.
So, am I hearing correctly that, part of your must-haves are just kind of really defining who you are?
Yes.
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 Okay.
Bullets. Bullets.
Bullets. Oh, yes.
Pun intended.
Yes. Law enforcement background. I love it.
Yes.
I love a good pun anyway. Everybody, David Leith has an incredible background. He's a full-time employee of his local county police department in New York. And he left the NYPD very early on in his career. And now, what he does is he supports law enforcement, military, nurses, and firefighters to tell their stories, to teach from their stories, and to transform and support others with their stories. He became a cop to support his young family financially. And then he ended up finding a much larger family on the job in law enforcement. And throughout his 23 plus year journey, he's experienced thousands of interactions with emergency medical staff and fire departments, and they've always treated him incredibly well. And the similarities of services go far deeper than surface level. Police, medical, and fire, they're all part of his larger family. And what's super cool, he supports that larger family with discovering their stories and putting their stories out to the world. But what's super cool is his better half is also a nurse. And that is part of the family that he supports with getting their stories out into the world. And every type of hero he believes could use a little bit of a recharge from time to time. Now, when you think about the presentations that you deliver, and I know you coach and I know you do podcasting, but I'm focused on the speaking. When you think about the presentations you deliver, Dave, what is your absolute favorite topic, hands down?
My favorite topic, hands down, is using your service as a form of achieving greatness. So, MLK said that anyone can become great because anyone can serve. And I learned early on that if you want to become greater, find a way to serve more people. So, that is why I took on the one to many platform, the one to many, as a way of helping people, but also as a way of helping myself become the greatest version of myself. That's always been my dream. It's kind of selfish, but also altruistic at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Now, when you are on the stage, what would you say is your favorite part about delivering a presentation? For some, it is getting started and getting the audience fired up. For others, it's the middle part where the aha moments are happening or the light bulbs are turning on. And then, yet for a third segment, it can be that closing, like you were sharing earlier. Maybe you share this incredible story or you give this incredible call to action. But when you think about the presentations that you deliver, if you could choose a favorite part, what is your favorite part of your presentations and why is that?
My favorite part is always the takeoff. Same thing with flying, it's the takeoff. So I want to take off strong and hard, like a sprinter out the gate. And I want to get people's head nod. I want to get some kind of reaction immediately. I want to get smiles. I want to get some heads nodding. I want to get some feedback immediately. So I want to know that I'm on the right track and that I connected with someone in that audience. That's what I want to know immediately. So my favorite part is definitely the takeoff. And I'm a big comic fan. So it's like when they take off and you hear that sonic boom, that's what I imagine in my head.
Now, you mentioned connections, and I wonder if you are a fan of engaging with audience members before your presentations or after your presentations. I'll tell you right now, me, I don't want to talk to anybody before my presentation. I will, especially if that's an expectation that has been set beforehand with me and the event contact or whatever the case may be, right? But as I'm getting ready for that presentation, that is all I want to think about. That is it. So, what school of thought are you in? You like the connecting and conversing
I
beforehand, afterwards, or neither one?
so it's funny that you say that because when I'm in a conference, a networking situation, I want to meet as many people as possible. I want to rally my troops behind me before I go onto the stage. So they're like, oh, I met Dave. Yeah, he has good energy. He's pretty chill. Even for a cop, even for what he does, he seems like a pretty good guy. I like him. I want that connection beforehand. So, afterwards, I will stick around, but I want to fly. I just want to go off into a corner and just read a book. When I would go to social family gatherings, in my 20s, I would bring a book because I am introverted when it comes to dealing with small gatherings, but I don't mind being on the stage in front of people because that feels different in a way. That's just me talking. It's not really a two-way. It's more of a one-way. I've never really been good at small talk. But before an event, I will force myself to make small talk with people because I want to meet as many attendees as possible, and I want to rally the troops behind me, quite honestly. That's my whole purpose, is I want to build rapport as quickly as possible so that it makes the job on the stage of building rapport a lot easier. The work has already been put in.
Nice. You mentioned being an introvert. A lot of times people mistake being introverted as something that does not position them to be a great speaker. However, I strongly disagree. What would you say is one of the characteristics of being introverted that supports you in being a dynamic speaker?
So I think one of the characteristics that supports me in being a dynamic speaker is the fact that I'm in my head so much that I'm articulating things in my phone and inside of my head, and I'm going over conversations and the way I want to present myself, so much so that when I actually step up to do it, I've already rehearsed several dozen times inside of my head, not even doing it live and actually speaking, but inside of my head, I've gone over it and visualized it so much. And I honestly think the introvert has the advantage there because they're inside so much more than the extrovert. The extrovert to me is so busy being extroverted and being extra and being out there and being the life of the party. Like, I am definitely not the life of the party. So, I'm not the guy that's going to show up and get everyone going inside the party. I am just not that guy, but I can connect one to one because I am a good listener. That's one of my skills. So, like, when I meet you for the very first time, I'm definitely going to do two times the listening and one time the speaking, because I'm such an introvert. Like, I know the power of my story, but I also know the power of your story. And if I let you tell me your story, you're gonna like me more. It's that no like and trust, you know?
Totally, totally. Now, I wonder if you have this challenge. Do you have friends and family who know what you do? You speak and you're on these big stages and you're getting people inspired and excited, and they just assume you are the life of the party. They get confused when you're not being quote unquote extra. Does that happen to you?
Yeah, my oldest son and my daughter-in-law, they tease me because they see me meet someone out in public and they see me make very quick small talk, and I'm like, okay, I gotta go. And so they tease me about that all the time because they're like, man, you really don't like small talk. But it depends on the setting. So if it's an important, if it's a talk, then I'm going to be there to listen to people, and they're gonna have my full attention at that point. But when I meet someone that I just know out in public, I'm like, I'm busy. I got things to do. I gotta go. It was good seeing you. Hey, we'll keep in touch. We'll talk. But I got a lot going on. And that was my interaction at the gym today. Someone asked me, "What do you got going on?" I'm like, "I got a lot going on today. I'll tell you in 1 minute, and then I'm out the door."
I have a similar situation with my husband. He knows that I'm an introvert, and he knows. He just knows when we do run into people or what have you, he knows that I am high energy and engaged with that person, but I'm also counting down the seconds as to when I can wrap this conversation up and be on my way,
Yeah,
because
because
I'm not crazy about the small talk either.
you got
And
a lot to do.
people, it's it, and it's confusing for people because they see you speaking for 60 minutes at a time and you are delivering this message, and they assume that that's what you are all the time. And I'm telling you, I can't tell you how many times it happens to me. And it's like, no, I'm up there and I'm doing a job and I'm being authentic. When you hear doing a job, sometimes that throws people off. No, they paid me to get up there and be high energy and deliver a message. So I'm going to give you 100%, but that's not me off the mic at all.
I completely understand when people say they need to go off and recharge and be. I completely understand that because I enjoy chess and I enjoy walks by myself. And I'll do a walk with my girlfriend. I'll do a walk with my family on Father's Day. But beyond that, I like to be headphones in, by myself, listening to my audiobook or, playing chess. I like to be by myself.
Oh my goodness, I know you have a question for me, but I do, and we'll get to it in a second. But you made me think about how I like to bike ride, and there are times when my husband will ask, "Hey, want to go on a family bike ride?" No, what do we bother with the two of you on my bike ride? My bike rides are me and my earbuds and
Yes.
the wind.
Yes. I do actually have a question for you, and I love that you have the earbuds in, and but it can be a little dangerous though on a bike. Do you go against track? This is not my question, by the way. I don't want to waste my one question, but when I walk on the street, I actually walk against traffic because I want to see what's coming at me.
Right. So I think, Dave, I really think I have superhuman powers when it comes to, I don't know what it is, just
You're a
being,
mom. I know what it is. You're a
well,
mom.
even before becoming a mom, but being very aware of my surroundings, right? So for one, I don't have the sound up so loud until I don't know what's going on. I do ride with the flow of traffic, partially because of where we live. We have dedicated bike lanes, and so you are going in the same direction as your motorized vehicles. And I feel very comfortable doing that from the beginning, and I have no idea why I feel very comfortable doing that. My husband, not so much. He's comfortable now, but not so much. I have done dangerous things on a bike, making a left turn when I know that light is going to turn red before I can get through it on my bike. But I am really, really good at being aware of my surroundings. And then again, like I said, I make sure the volume is at a point where if someone were to honk a horn or something like that, I'm going to hear it.
I was in the like I mentioned earlier, I was in the bike unit, and I spent years on a bike, so sometimes my girlfriend will see me take some risk that she's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you were in the bike unit." She's like, "You ride your bike like a maniac sometimes."
It's so funny. I remember one morning I was coming into our neighborhood, and we live in a neighborhood that's pretty sizable, and there's always these people tending the yard. What is the word I'm looking for here? I mean, there's always grass to cut
Landscaping.
and trees to trim and landscape workers. Yes. So they're always here. I mean, I don't know how they do it. I'm sure they start at one end of the community, work the way to the other end, and then by the time they're done, it's time to start all over again. At any rate, one morning, and I don't know why I didn't have anything playing that morning, or maybe I did, but I heard one of the workers say, "You ride that thing like it's a motorcycle." So I hear what your significant other says when it comes to being on a bike. And I don't know, you just kind of live dangerously after you get used to riding it so much.
I should be a little bit more safer, especially now that I have so many people depending on me. So
Exactly.
I do have one burning question for you,
Yes.
that I've been wondering, that I ask a lot of speakers this question. Do you change your call to action depending on your audience, or is it always the same call to action? The same action that you want them to take, in terms of them following up with you or taking some specific action, or is it audience dependent? That's my one burning question.
It's audience dependent. It's partially audience dependent and presentation dependent. I have to ask myself, what did they come to get? And what do they need beyond this presentation? So my call to action is going to be more audience centric than it is speaker centric. So I am thinking to myself, do I need them to read a little bit more on this topic? Do I need them to engage with a colleague about this topic? Do I want them to bring me in to speak on this topic again or something like that? So it really depends on the audience, and it really depends on what it is that I know they're wanting to get out of this message. And then secondarily, what do I want to get out of it? So I'll give you an example of the what do I want to get out of it. If I'm presenting at a conference where the room is filled with either my ideal client or they are closely connected to the decision makers or my ideal client, and they're going to go back to their respective offices. One of the calls to action that I'm going to have is going to be directly connected to them booking a call with me or having their decision maker book a call with me. So the audience is going to determine that call to action. What they need is going to determine the call to action, but also what do I need to get out of it? So again, if I'm at a conference, 9 times out of 10, a CTA is going to be you getting on the phone with me so we can discuss how I can get this message to the rest of your colleagues at your respective organizations and get myself a paycheck.
That's good. I love to hear other speakers how they answer that question because you get a lot of different answers. So I love to hear, your modalities.
So I'm going to throw the question back at you. What does your call to action look like? Is it audience dependent or something else? Or does everybody get the same CTA?
So for me, I craft it around the audience, and it's typically, hey, if you want to connect after this, it's typically I want to connect with people. So I like the one-to-one interaction, and finding out exactly what they need. So my call to action is typically, hey, let's connect after the event, but it is audience specific also. So I'm going to make an offer for them to follow up with me to get more of what they came for. That's typically like I'm going to just determine what it is that they came for, and then at some point I'm going to make a very smooth offer like, hey, if you'd like to get more of this thing that you came here for, then follow up with me and we'll have a conversation about it.
Yeah, perfect. Dave, what is one last thing our listeners need to know to make sure they always own the microphone?
One last thing that your listeners need to know: when you get an opportunity, no matter how small or how big the opportunity is, consider it practice. Consider it practice for the big stage. You don't know when your big stage moment is. You don't know when it's coming up. You don't know if that stage that you think is the big stage opportunity really is the big stage opportunity. So consider it practice, and don't overthink it and say like, oh my God, this is the most people I've ever spoken in front of. To date, the most people I've ever spoken in front of was a couple of hundred people, right? It hasn't been a stadium or an audience or 30,000 people in a stadium, right? It hasn't been that, but you don't have to be in that scenario for it to be your biggest opportunity. You can also overplay it in your mind. So the biggest thing is, think of it as they're all practice. I'm gonna practice this one as if it is my biggest stage ever. And don't overthink it in your mind. Just it's all practice. It really is until you get to the big stage and you really know this is okay. This is the big stage. This is the one.
You'll know it, right? You'll know
You'll
it when
know
you
it.
see
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. And even then,
Awesome.
it's still practice for the next one. 'Cause something that Grant Cardone said is if you're sweating this one deal, that means you don't have enough deals in your pipeline. So he was talking about real estate, and he was also talking about speaking opportunities. If you're really, really sweating this one stage, like, oh my God, this I have to, this one, this is it, then that means you don't have, if you have an abundance mindset, an abundance of stages, an abundance of opportunities in your pipeline. There's no shortage of opportunities, right? So if you have an abundance of opportunities in your pipeline, you won't sweat the one that's coming up. Don't sweat it. This is everybody's just figuring it out. They're just doing the best they can, so don't sweat it.
Fantastic advice. Dave Leith, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me. This has been fun, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Absolutely. Cool beans, cool beans. And to the listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I am Bridget McGowan. Until next time, make sure you always own the microphone.